welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the March 3, 2019 session, focusing on Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 43. The mountain is calling. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Burt Montgomery.
All right, so mountains. Have you had an experience in the mountains? First time maybe that you really were in true mountains? I know, I'll start. For me, I was on a business trip years ago and ended up in Estes Park, Colorado. And if you know, Estes Park is nestled there in the mountains in the Rockies. And if you drive up just a bit, you're in a national park, or Rocky Mountain National Park. And it is just breathtaking. And to me, an Arkansas boy who, you know, my thought was mountains were the Ozarks, which really those are just little bumps. And suddenly I'm seeing real mountains. So what's your mountain story, your experience?
I'll go. So when I was in college, my senior year, I had the really wonderful opportunity to study abroad in India. And so I was there for 3 months, and we had this huge trip planned, but we were actually there. That's where I was when 9/11 happened. And so One of the trips was to go to see the Taj Mahal, but that got canceled because nobody really knew what was going on at this time. And they didn't want us going to big landmarks. And we thought we were going to be super disappointed, but we ended up changing our trip. And we got to go to Sikkim, which is just north of India. And it's a part of it anyway. And I got to tour the Himalayas. And so I got to go whitewater rafting in the Himalayas.
Really?
Yeah, and I got to see all of these amazing monasteries, and I've just never seen anything like it. But the most amazing part of the whole trip was one night we came into this town, and it was at dark. And so we got in, we checked into our hotel, and we went to sleep. And we woke up the next morning, and it was still very early, but the light was coming in the window, so I stepped out. And I literally could not see my hand in front of my face because I woke up in a cloud.
Wow.
And I couldn't see, you know, 2 feet in front of my face. It was amazing. But as the clouds cleared, there was just this beautiful, it was amazing. Like, so, yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a great story. My wife loves to hike, and I'm what you would call indoorsy. And so occasionally, you know, we would go together, but she always loves to find that cliff that sort of hangs over and gets the wonderful view.
Yeah.
And maybe this contributes to my indoorsiness. I have a little fear of heights. And so she's over there, legs dangling over, look, and I'm like, oh my God.
Goodness.
You know, I'm hanging back. I'm like, nope, this
holding
is the
on
edge.
To a tree.
I'm pretending this is the edge right here. Yeah. So there, the times I can get over that, beautiful, wonderful times, and my wife can make me do that. Nobody else can.
I'm going to save my story for my introduction.
Okay, well, very good then. Well, hey. You know, the mountains are just so unique that they often are memorable, and we have a memorable event on a mountaintop in this passage today. So, Bert, could you help us get started?
Okay, well, my turn. One of the most terrifying moments in my married life occurred when my wife Jency and I found ourselves high up on a mountain outside of Poughkeepsie, New York, more than 25 years ago now. And we were on a road trip which included Jency's cousin Randall, and we were driving around Poughkeepsie in a tiny red two-door Ford Escort hatchback. Now, there are some beautiful mountains up in that area of New York State, including one where we sat at the bottom and we looked up and we waved at Pete Seeger's house, and he was still alive, so we imagined him waving back. But down in Poughkeepsie, there was one large mountain overlooking the town, and as you looked at that mountain, which was covered in trees and woods, about three-fourths of the way up that mountain, right smack dab in the center of the mountain, overlooking Poughkeepsie, was a tiny, small clearing and one single white house. Now, everything else, as we could tell, was forest. And Randall imagined standing out on the front porch overlooking the entire town. So we're driving all over Poughkeepsie, and that mountain was calling out to Randall Cook the whole time. And so finally, as we thought we were about to leave Poughkeepsie, the next thing Jency and I knew, we were on a tiny one-lane dirt road weaving back and forth and being jerked up and down through nothing but woods up that mountain in a tiny two-door Ford Escort. Not one's first choice for off-road adventures. Now, Randall is the kind of guy who can talk his way into anything, and he knew that if he got up there, he could talk the owners of the house, letting him to walk out onto the porch and take a picture. And he's that kind of guy. He could have done that. Now, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. And when I say absolutely nothing, I mean there was absolutely nothing along this tiny one-laned dirt road weaving back and forth up through the woods until we reached a small clearing about halfway up. And it wasn't the clearing for the house. It was a very small clearing where there was a rusted out 1960s VW Beetle completely riddled with bullet holes. It was like out of a mobster movie, or like the car from Bonnie and Clyde when the law finally caught up to them. Now, that was enough for Jency and me to say, okay, we need to turn around. And having been a connoisseur of horror films that I am, I already noticed how much it was already beginning to feel like we were in a Wes Craven movie, which you should look up if you don't know who Wes Craven is. It's the kind of movie that would always have a title like Don't Drive Up the Mountain, when a group of naive young people would venture up a mountainside alone and it doesn't end well, right? Well, this VW Beetle shot up with bullet holes just really added to our sense of foreboding. But Randall, despite our pleas, just kept going as slow as you were going to go in a Ford Escort up a big hill. And it felt like it was going to fall apart at any moment, but further up and further in. And we finally came to a second clearing, much higher. And sure enough, there was the back side of the house, which overlooked Poughkeepsie, New York. And it was totally abandoned. And it was shoddy, and it had been vandalized all over on the outside. It was creepy. And Jency and I sat in the car, scared out of our wits. We had our doors locked and our windows mostly up, cracked just a little bit so we could hear if Randall screamed. But Randall got out and walked through the open back door and disappeared from our view. And he was gone only about 5 minutes, but I tell you, it really felt like hours. And Randall emerged, running as fast as he could out that back door. He jumped into the car, and he floored it, which doesn't mean much for a Ford Escort. But he floored it, and we took off down that bumpy mountain dirt road, and he did not say a word until we got to the bottom of that mountain. And Randall pulled over and took a deep breath. Now, there's more to the story, which I'll say for another time. But let's just say that he got that picture that he wanted from the front porch overlooking Poughkeepsie, New York. And I have to say, it indeed is a breathtaking view. Terrifying things can happen on mountains, but so can incredibly wonderful things. But one thing is certain, our perspectives change radically as a result of our experiences on mountains. In the great stories of our faith, throughout our scriptures, the mountain is a holy place. It was on a mountain that God called Moses. After the Exodus from Egypt, God had Moses gather the people around Mount Sinai, and on Mount Sinai, God gave Moses the law. Moses died on Mount Nebo. Elijah defeated the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. One of Jesus' temptations occurred on an exceedingly high mountain. Our beloved Beatitudes, the Blessed Are, come from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Jesus was crucified on a hill called Golgotha. The New Jerusalem we read about in Revelation is known as Mount Zion. And this transfiguration event that we read about in today's text, this event for Peter and James and John to witness, affirmed on a mountain that Jesus is Lord of all. Jesus took Peter, James, and John up a mountain. Peter, James, and John, who on their good days still wondered if Jesus would choose one of them to be his right-hand man when he overthrows the Roman government and establishes his earthly kingdom. Peter, James, and John, Jesus takes them up a mountain. They didn't seem too keen on the idea of self-sacrifice that Jesus talked about, and they sure weren't too happy about Jesus saying he's intentionally going to go right into Jerusalem, where they knew he was about to be killed. Peter, James, and John, who found it easy to love Jesus when things were going well for them, but they have a lot of questions and actually resist Jesus when things aren't going so well for them. Peter, James, and John are taken up a mountain and offered a fresh new perspective. And on that mountain, they catch a glimpse of Jesus that is, as Jesus is bigger than they are, that Jesus is bigger than even the most important figures and the most important teachings of the historic religion and faith, that Jesus is bigger than their own desires and any fears they have about the world below. Jesus is bigger. The transfiguration on that mountain declares for us that God, through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, is always just bigger. Mountains can be breathtaking and beautiful and relaxing and refreshing, but mountains can also be downright terrifying. Peter, James, and John were terrified from what they saw on that mountain. Experiences on mountains can be any of these things or all of these at the same time, from Peter, James, and John with Jesus to our own camping trips or our ill-advised excursions just to get a little photograph. We almost always come away from a mountain with a new perspective. And isn't that what we need most sometimes? To step aside and get our priorities straight, to retreat, to get focused again on God and less obsessed with ourselves, to put life and death and everything in between into a broader, more eternal perspective. As I end our time here, as we're talking about the Transfiguration, I want to share a few lyrics from a song from a good friend of mine, Daniel Bailey. And we're going to include a link to this, to the MP3 of this song, simply called The Mountain. The mountain is calling. Travelers, take to the road. The mountain is calling. Travelers, it's time to come home. Come home to find the God that is bigger than the sum of our deeds, the taker of fears and the giver of dreams, the God that is bigger than the plans we have made, the God that is bigger than the bombs in the sky or the flags that we wave. The mountain is calling, calling to those who would hear. Turn your swords into plows and find the love that casts out all fear. The mountain is calling. Come and you will find the God that is bigger than the sum of our deeds, the taker of fears and the giver of dreams, the God that is bigger than the plans we have made, than the bombs in the sky or the flags that we wave. The mountain is calling.
Okay, I'll just say it. This is a bizarre story.
In what way?
I love how, and the other gospel writers do this too. I mean, I like the way Matthew tells it too, but so Jesus goes up with Peter, James, and John to the mountain to pray. And Luke just tells us, his appearance changed, his clothes become dazzling white. Suddenly there were two men. I mean, there's no exclamation points. There's no, wait, you're not going to believe this. He just tells it like we're supposed to, like it happens every day, you know. Hey, so this happened. And it's, but, you know, whatever it is that takes place here, it's so memorable, it's so incredible that Peter, bless his heart, wants to stay there. You know, I've often joked, we all have that friend like Peter that we get nervous whenever they open their mouth. Mm-hmm. In this case, I actually don't blame Peter. You know, this is such a glorious experience. He says, let's stay up here. Mm-hmm. Let's stay up here. Let's build some dwellings so that we can just stay up here and continue this mountaintop experience. Whereas, like Randall, Jesus is heading back down the mountain. And it's interesting. I mean, we can speculate, maybe we will here, but in the midst of this glorious experience where people want to stay on the mountain, Jesus says, we need to go back. Mm. Why do y'all think that is?
Well, the way you're describing that, Daniel, it makes me think of, at first, the incarnation. I mean, Jesus didn't come to take us out and above and beyond, but to keep us in the world as it is. And so you got to go back. And you know, one of my favorite professors from seminary, Dr. Glenn Henson, was a personal friend of the late monk Thomas Merton, who, if you've ever read Merton, you know that eventually after being at the monastery, the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky for a long time, he began writing and began going out and speaking and engaging the world a little bit. But the more he went out and engaged with the world again, the more he had to withdraw alone and the deeper he had to go. And he eventually became a hermit and had his own little hermitage at the monastery and wasn't participating with the monks very often anything. And Henson said the more he went out, the deeper he had to go, and the deeper he had to drill a well, an emotional well for his spirit, only to be sent back out again. And I think the idea of the mountain is that we get these moments to remind us of who God is and how big God is and who Jesus is, and that Jesus is bigger even than our greatest biblical heroes and our most divine and treasured doctrines. But then we've got to get back out into the world and live among where Jesus wants us to be and where Jesus is. And we go right down the mountain. And the second part of this text that we have today is immediately, depending on how you look at it and how you interpret it, but it's written as an exorcism of a child. And, you know, modern translations talk about Jesus healing a child with epilepsy. It certainly sounds like epilepsy, a child foaming and, you know, falling out and things like that. But whatever it is, however we want to describe it, a child with epilepsy, a child possessed, it's a very frightening and a very real situation that most of us would love to escape from and never have to deal with again. And it's just that immediacy of when you come down the mountain, you get right back into the grid of stuff. But Peter, James, and John learned a little something from that mountain experience. I don't know what that means.
I think a lot of times when I have read this text before, I think about it as an experience for Peter, James, and John, that they came up and they saw something, they became aware of something, they saw the glory of God shine in Jesus. But I wonder what it means if we think about it, and this kind of is a response to your question, Daniel, a little. If we think about it as going up there was for Jesus. We know that Jesus goes away. He goes to be apart and to be alone so that he can pray. Like, this is something that we often raise up when we teach about what it means to follow Jesus. Jesus took time to be apart so that he could pray and care for his own self. And so I wonder if, kind of like a baptism moment for Jesus, that if this was another clarifying point of call for Jesus. And so then it would make sense, Daniel, in response to your question, that we go back down the mountain because down the mountain is where we are called. It is where we are to do the work. There's a lot of talk, particularly in ministerial circles, but I think that also just in larger society, that taking care of ourselves, nurturing our own wellness and our own spirit is really important. And so I wonder if when we take the time to separate, to step away, to, as Bert was talking, go deep, to draw away, that it helps bring clarity to the work that we are supposed to be doing.
My mind is racing now. I think you're exactly right, Nikki. I had not connected transfiguration with baptism before. But I mean, it's clear here. It's also at Jesus' baptism that a voice from heaven says, "This is my son."
Right. Mm. Yeah.
And you know, this clarity of call, clarity of purpose. It's almost ascending, you know, moment as you talk about it. And yeah, Jesus knows he can't stay on the mountain. I mean, we've all had those mountaintop experiences. You can't live there. As wonderful and as needed as those are, life is down in the valley.
And it's not at all odd, I think, to think about Jesus needing these moments to clarify and focus and sharpen or widen his call, because we know, like, he grew in wisdom and stature. So we have this kind of call that, you know, this, the scripture that says Jesus grew. And we know that after his baptism, he goes into the wilderness and he goes through this time of formation. This is another one of those times. We know that after he meets the Syrophoenician woman, the direction to which his ministry goes gets wider. And so I think that as we look at the way that Jesus is nurtured and called and transformed across his ministry, that it can be instructive for us.
You know, Nikki, when you were talking, you used the phrase self-care. Mm-hmm. And that immediately made me think of a statement from Parker Palmer, mm-hmm. who says that self-care is never a selfish act. It is simply good stewardship of the only gift I have, the gift I was put on earth to offer others.
What a wonderful image of balance in our lives. We need the mountain. We need the reminder of the sense of call. We need those experiences that expose us to the glory and wonder of God and faith and energize us. But we also are called to be in the valley and be at work to do ministry. I think before the podcast began, we have been talking about how the actual text that we're given for this week includes the story that follows this, right? Where there is a need to go back down in the valley because there's a boy with a demon. There's much for us to do, but what a wonderful reminder that we need both. We need the mountain and we need to be at work in the valley. May all those who care for others also exercise wise self-care. And may we all remember those times where we have seen the glory of God in our lives. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.